Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, Seth, I want to read this for you. Brian T. Smith is a columnist for the Houston Chronicle. I love reading him. He doesn't pander. He's honest. But
it's funny because Brian started off as a writer for, I think he started with the Astros, then he moved over to the Texans, but then he turned columnist. So like when you say like he doesn't pull any punches or anything, he used to be like very, he had like kind of like a very, his prose was almost poetic. And then he turned into a columnist and all of a sudden he turned into an assassin like overnight.
It was crazy to watch.
Yeah.
And he's super on it. I really like him. But anyway, he wrote this column last week. And the gist of the article is, with the release of Deontay Foreman, Bill O'Brien has nobody to blame. Nobody to hide behind anymore. It's all on Bill O'Brien. And he's specifically talking about whiffing on third round picks.
Yeah.
Here's the most hard-hitting part of the column. He says, quote, "It was easy and convenient to blame Smith for the Texans' lack of depth, Rick Smith. He says, it was far too easy and convenient for some within NRG to immediately paint Gain as the in-over-his-head GM who just didn't get it. Quote, the Texans still lack depth. They're still looking up at the NFL's elite, and they're banking on everything clicking just in time for their piece-together offensive line. He goes on to say, that's neither on Smith or Gain. That's on the Texans and the coach they keep on giving more power to. When you miss that bad that many times, there's always a common denominator. So this is the big theme in Houston now. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, people are anti-Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, there's a notion that, all right, Bill O'Brien hasn't done anything in terms of actually advancing in the playoffs. You know, you have a playoff victory versus the Raiders, a couple losses to the Patriots, and then an embarrassing one to the Colts last year. And I think that, especially with the Astros doing as well as they've done,
yeah,
the Astros have put such pressure on the other organizations. And there's this perception that, okay, well, the Texans are just third fiddle in terms of actual competitive drive. And I get it. I totally understand why people feel that way. There's some things that there's a little bit of a disconnect because some people go so far as to say, well, they don't care as long as they're selling out tickets and that's why they're not even trying. Okay, not even trying doesn't make sense because, for one, you know what trying was? Trying was giving $43 million guaranteed to Brock Osweiler. Like, that was taking a massive swing on really a pretty tepid prospect. And it was a bad move. Don't get me wrong, it was a bad move. But that's different. Like, incompetence is different than not trying. Then you go and you trade up for Deshaun Watson. Like, that's obviously trying. What they haven't done is actually, they haven't succeeded. Like, it's almost to the point where people have gotten frustrated to the point where they're not, they need to come up with a new and creative way to complain about the team not winning. So they create conspiracy theories in their minds instead of just saying like, well, wow, this isn't good enough. And it might very well be that Bill O'Brien's not good enough. I get frustrated sometimes when I'm looking there and I'm looking at DeAndre Hopkins and J.J. Watt and Deshaun Watson and trying to figure out how somehow your simplified version for why it's not working is that they're not trying hard enough.
Here's the other thing.
I don't get it.
Well, it doesn't make sense because Bill O'Brien has all the power. Okay, so it's not like
but,
all.
But that's a. Re- but that's well.
Yeah, but Bill O'Brien's not going to not want to win.
It's never been this forthright that he has all the power.
Well, now he does.
He's always had, since Rick Smith left, he's had all the power.
But now, I'm saying, if you know that the coach is the one with all the power, the coach wants to win.
Okay.
The coach always wants to win his own, you know, career.
But this is where people get frustrated. And I understand where they're coming from in this. I think people genuinely feel that, like, okay, well, Bill O'Brien has all the power and nobody believes that Bill O'Brien's going to get fired if all of a sudden they have a miserable season. That Bill O'Brien is somehow untouchable. He's gotten two GMs fired. He's rolled through a lot of adversity. And this is where I am with Bill O'Brien. it's hard for me because I don't like making excuses for people. He has some legitimate excuses for some of the difficulties he's had in the form of 19 different quarterbacks before they got to Deshaun Watson. And I'll make excuses for him up to then. When we get to last year was where the excuses stop. So I have to look at, and I almost evaluate Bill O'Brien like starting from scratch last year because Deshaun Watson was healthy for the most part. He had to deal with his lungs, but like he played all 16 games. And I think that they underperformed offensively. And I know they had injuries and other reasons for underperforming. This year, I don't expect there to be any excuses for underperforming. So, but I think that's where, when you ask about why are people so aligned against Bill O'Brien, I think there's a multiple factors, but a big part of it was maybe just simply the way he came into town, where there was a certain, he still had a little bit of that thing that you see out of former Belichick disciples where they haven't realized like, oh, I can't walk around like I did in New England and act like we're better than everybody
else. Look at the treatment Matt Patricia's getting in Detroit.
Yeah. Well, and this is what people tell you. You know, I talk to guys that played for the Patriots, guys that have coached for the Patriots, and there's a sense when they walk around the building up there, there's kind of a sense of like, look at all these other teams in the league. Idiots. I don't know what they're doing. Like, look at this guy. And you're watching film. You're like, look at this clown. Can't believe they're even trying it like that. Like, there's this cockiness. And they deserve it up there in New England, right? But then all these protégés come and they get into their new towns and they think they're going to be able to keep acting like that. Yeah. You know what it is? It's like when a New Yorker comes to town and it's like, well, I'm going to show y'all, you know, when a New Yorker acts like, well, this is how we do it back up in New York. And this is you see, the thing is, this is how it needs to happen. And everybody's like, shut the hell up. Nobody wants to hear what your opinion is of the way things should operate. That's how O'Brien came into town. He's changed a lot since then. But a lot of people have a hard time forgetting that like, man, for the first couple of years, it was, well, nobody really knows anything about football, but this is the way it goes. And then on Hard Knocks, there was a clip of O'Brien talking about how he was tired of the disrespect they show our quarterbacks. He's talking about Hoyer and Mallett. These kids can play. So it was Bill O'Brien, the guy that knows football, not you idiots from Texas. You don't know football. I know football. And that stuck. And I think that these last few years, he hasn't been like that, but in a lot of people's minds. Text line, back me up on this. Tell me if I'm right or wrong.
The text line has been backing you up all show. We have somebody wrote in last segment. They said, Gruden, Patricia, O'Brien are the three coaches that annoy me. Their attitude and their hubris outweighs their effectiveness. Somebody's writing in right now. His arrogance, saying fans don't understand how. And I have been getting calls.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, how hard it is to score in the red zone. Yeah. He did that a lot last year. Like, you guys don't know how. Oh, and then look, I honestly, like, I take that personally sometimes too. Because I'll sit, there was a game last year where they had it. They were first and one on the goal line. And I don't need the coach telling me how hard it is to score on the goal line, because you know what? It's actually really easy to score from first and one. It's like ridiculously hard not to score from first and one. The odds are phenomenally in favor of scoring from first and one. So I don't want to hear that. But yeah, it was, oh, people don't understand this. People don't understand that. People don't want to hear that they don't understand stuff. Right. They just want to get results. Like, they just want wins.
Well, and I've actually noticed this because I'm from the East Coast. Yeah. And I've noticed this as an East Coast guy. Is, you know, I'll tell you a story. This is how you make friends on the East Coast. You take a dump all over each other until you see if they can handle it or not. Like, you insult each other, you bang on each other, and if they can handle it, then they're cool, they're your buddy. Like, if they can hang, like it's just, it's a, I don't know, the East
it's
Coast.
It's ball busting.
It's ball busting, and it's like, and it's sarcastic, and it's callous, and that's just how. And my girlfriend, who's from Arizona, she gets mad at me all the time because I'm always making fun of her. I don't think that I'm being mean. She thinks I'm being mean. I do think that there's something about Bill O'Brien's attitude that comes off as arrogant, but maybe to him and to the rest of his buddies from back east, because to me, he doesn't rub me the wrong way at all.
Right.
But
yeah, no, there's definitely something to that. Like, but I think he's changed that over time too. Like, he's learned that sometimes like the sarcasm doesn't play in press conferences and everything, and he's had to learn, because he'll make a pretty funny joke and everybody's terrified of him.
Yeah.
Or they act like they're scared of him. I don't know if it's as much as that. I don't think it's, I think because there's plenty of like East Coast guys that have been popular in this town. I think it was more the actual football side of things. Like, there's a particular New England Patriots arrogance that those guys, and that's why it screws so many of them.
You know what's
like, that's why, like, when McDaniels goes to Denver, when Patricia, like you said, goes out, like, these guys just, they don't get it. Like, they really don't appreciate and understand how much they were helped by Bill Belichick.
That's what I was going to say. You know what's funny about the whole, like, Patriots disciple thing? And this is the way I always think about it. Like, you know how many decisions Bill Belichick makes a day? He probably makes 1,000 tiny decisions that can only come out of Bill Belichick's brain.
Yeah.
Like he shows up and he's on the practice field and he's deciding in his brain whether to coach a guy up on this or take him aside later, or he's in the film room. Should I call him out in public, or just these tiny little nuanced decisions? And over time, like, you can maybe Bill O'Brien learned what Bill Belichick's system was in 2011. But you know how much it's probably changed since then, now that it's 2019?
Well, this is where I get frustrated again with some guys that come out of New England. And there was a quote in an Ian O'Connor book that drove me absolutely insane, where a Patriots assistant coach basically said that they felt like they could do what they do with Tom Brady with any of the top 10 or 15 quarterbacks in the league, because Brady's not that special of an arm and all this. And I've had that theory for years. It was nice to see it in print. That, honestly, I think that even Bill Belichick doesn't genuinely appreciate how good Tom Brady is. Because what happens is, they're a game plan offense, and they talk about it like, oh yeah, we're a game plan offense, no big deal, right? Like, yeah, going and changing your entire game plan every week, that is actually...
Yeah, which quarterback can do
it's
that?
It's a really big deal. Yeah. It's a really huge big deal. The other thing is, setting the expectations and the tone for your receivers as a quarterback and having that leadership ability... In all these multiple option routes that those guys have to learn, it takes a special type of brain and leader to do that, and Tom Brady is that guy.
Right.
So, guys, they go and they run offenses with other quarterbacks, and they come in and they think, oh, yeah, we're just going to change the offense completely every week. No big deal, right? And like, yeah, no, it is. It's a really, really big deal. Just because Tom Brady doesn't have a great arm doesn't mean that his brain, like I've always said, Tom Brady's brain is the equivalent of running a 405-40. Like, it's ridiculous. You know, and defensive coordinators will talk about Brady and his ability to sniff out what you're doing like he's some kind of magician. I've been on the field, like, where you realize, with Peyton Manning, I didn't play against Brady, but Peyton was the same kind of way. You're on the field in the third quarter and you think you got a good game going versus Peyton Manning, and then all of a sudden you realize, like, he's in the middle of a snap count and you can just tell, like, oh, crap. He sniffed
he
out
figured
the, safety,
you out,
the
yeah.
safety blitz we have on. Yeah. And like, because you know the safety just, like, took a 6-inch step forward or something like that.
You know what?
And then, like, you feel it. You feel it for the rest of the game. You're like, there's nothing we can do. He's got us figured out. We're going to try to tweak some things and everything. But he's got all his tells. He knows what he wants to do, and we're screwed. And that's what you get with Brady.
You know what that makes me think about? Did you see All or Nothing this year?
No.
So All or Nothing is the Amazon one. It's the full season of Hard Knocks. And they followed around the Carolina Panthers last year.
Okay.
Cam Newton is self-obsessed. He's walking around with a cigar every episode. You can tell the cigar is clearly for the image.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the guy looks like a total tool. And but the point is, like, Cam's all about himself. He's all about how he looks. And it's like, when Tom Brady does the Tom versus time thing, the whole thing's about, look at how many hours he's spending on his computer breaking down film.
Yeah.
Cam, you gotta, like, it's just, like, Tom Brady seems to be all in on the work that it takes, and I don't know how many other quarterbacks around the NFL could be like that.
I think there are a lot, and that's where it is. Like, it's Belichick and Brady together. Like, I don't like even getting into that debate, because it's almost like saying that, like, hey, that couple has been happily married for 30 years. Who is it really? Is it him or is it her? It's like, no, it's together. It's like, that union together is what worked. And, like, Belichick and Brady might secretly despise each other. I don't know. But as far as the working relationship goes, it's in combination. Like, Brady knows a lot of what he knows in terms of, like, what to look for on film, because Belichick's telling him what to look for on film, you know. But it's not so simple that Belichick could have just done that with, hey, Vinny Testaverde or anybody else.
All right, Seth, you got to sit down and rewatch preseason game one for a second time yesterday. So we're going to check in with Seth coming up next. What did he see? He's got the trained eye. What did he see? Matthew Jarecki, Seth Payne, Sports Radio 610. Seth Payne, Matthew Jarecki, Texans training camp special. Show's flown by today. It's been fun. We'll take some calls. We'll go to Lamont in Mo City. Lamont, you want to talk about Bill O'Brien's attitude?
Lamont.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Good. How are you?
Oh, I'm all right. I want to talk about Bill O'Brien's attitude. You know, yeah, I think it's easy to say that we all upset with him behind his attitude. You know, Texas is, you know, good old laid-back country. And New York, the East Coast is a little rambunctious. But I don't. I really don't think it's all of that, man. We can deal with Bill O'Brien if the dude is a snob. As long as he's winning, when it comes down to Bill O'Brien, for me, and I'm not speaking for 6 million other Houstonians, but for me, it's having a team prepared. You don't go into last season, the first 3 games, and the guys look clueless, and you so as hell don't go into the playoffs in relying. In NRG, and just look like you don't even have a clue. And then when people call you on it and ask you questions about it, you get pissed.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if
the way he prepped his team. Hello?
Yeah, yep, you're there. You're there.
No. The way he prepped his team is what I have an issue with. You know, if Greg Popovich or Bill Belichick was the coach and they have a little attitude, I don't care about anything like that, man, because they winning. I don't care about Bill O'Brien's.
You know what? No, that's a really good point, Lamont. I think we dropped you. You're cutting in and out. It's a really good point about Popovich, because since we were talking about okay, like how much of it is just Bill O'Brien's attitude and maybe like his Northeastern ways or his New England Patriots attitude. Yeah, with Popovich, nobody gives a damn. Popovich is even more laid in San Antonio, which is even more laid back than Houston, and it's not a big deal as long as you're winning. It's Lamont making the point about the preparedness of the team. That's a really interesting one, because it goes back to what we've said about the offensive line. And this is one of my concerns over the last few years with the offensive line, is that they've gone in and it's almost like in week one, they're realizing, oh, wow, the offensive line is really bad. We might be in trouble here. Like, how did we not understand or realize that the offensive line was this bad? A couple years ago, it was when Dwayne Brown was holding out and you had an inadequate line there, but there were also other issues there too. So I think that the fact that they do feel like they're ambushed at the beginning of every year and that they have to get knocked on their heels and then readjust and then tweak things and all of a sudden get things back to normal, I think that probably, it starts off each season. There have been enough seasons now that have gotten off to slow starts. And you know how it is in the NFL. Like, every year there's a team in the NFL that like gets off to a slow start, and nationally you kind of check out on them, and then all of a sudden there's 3 weeks left in the season and you're like, oh wow, the Chargers are in playoff contention. I didn't even realize it. That's how the Texans have become locally, I think, in some ways, where if they have some hardship early on, people almost check out
and
on
it. It's going to be worse this year with the Astros making a World Series run.
Yeah.
I got to say, you know, I don't want to be the Bill O'Brien apologist, and I'm not trying to be, but here's the other side of the coin. Is we know that the Patriots start off slow every year in the first 4 weeks, or at least they don't. They're not humming in the first 4 weeks.
They've had several two and two starts, right?
They're figuring out what they are. Is that what Bill O'Brien's doing, or is it just simply being underprepared, like Lamont said?
I think that the fear would be, for me personally, it's that sometimes I worry they're not good at evaluating their own talent, and that, you know, like with O'Brien, if I think about O'Brien as a GM, I think sometimes, you know, Sean Pendergast pointed this out the other day, that, boy, you can get in his doghouse, but if you get in his, whatever the opposite of doghouse is, if you get up in, like, his birdcage where he loves you and wants to hold you forever, he'll keep you forever.
Yeah.
Like, he will lock you down, and he has a hard time relinquishing you. I think he gets that way with players sometimes, and then I think maybe he talks himself into it, like a guy being okay. I think Gary Kubiak was like this with Matt Schaub to a certain degree, because Kubiak, he's a good quarterbacks coach. One of the things a good quarterbacks coach has to do is really like love and trust his quarterbacks. And that's what he did with Matt Schaub, to the point where he couldn't see past a lot of Matt Schaub's weaknesses.
Well,
after a certain point.
I don't think Bill O'Brien can afford to do that. I really don't. I think, I don't know if it's always been this way, but for the last 2 weeks, the entire text line and all of my calls for the last 2 weeks have been anti-Bill O'Brien.
Uh-huh.
And it's really been apparent since the Astros traded for Greinke. And I don't know if that's...
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, well, like that it felt like, okay, look at what the Astros are doing.
Well, yeah, it's the second... Because they did it in 2017 with Verlander. Uh-huh. And then they go out and get Greinke, and it's like... And the Rockets going out for Westbrook doesn't help the situation. I don't think Bill O'Brien can afford to misevaluate his offensive line this preseason. Because everybody knows Trent Williams is potentially available.
I think it's so hard to judge now because you have to wonder, all right, what's the actual opinion of the fan versus what am I seeing on social
media?
Well, yeah. Because social media is a cynical place. Like, and it gets cynical real hard.
So is the text line, and so are the calls.
Because if we thought about what people were saying about the Astros on Twitter in 2013 and 2014, there's a whole lot of like, oh wow, Jim Crane doesn't actually care about winning. Oh, Jim Crane.
But I think
spend
people
money.
Really thought that until they were shown the way.
Right. Exactly. Well, no. But now that you're winning, it's very easy to say like, oh wow, look at all this. Of course, it makes sense. It's the Astros know exactly what they're doing. Even after they started winning, 2015, 2016, there was still a healthy skepticism about were the Astros, did they think they were a little too smart for their own good? Do they always try to buck their, are they trying to win every trade? Like all these things, there are still those question marks. And then obviously the World Series and Verlander took care of a lot of that. I think it's just natural. Like, I think it's natural that when you have a team like the Astros that's as dominant as they are right now, and frankly, it just... I almost want to say perfect in so many ways that there's going to be comparisons. This isn't like your children where, you know, you have to remind the second one that you love it also, even though the first one is like achieving more and all this stuff. It's like, ah, no, you know what? I'll play favorites with my progeny when I'm a fan. And I'll say like, okay, Astros, you're up here. Texans, go to your room until you prove to me that you deserve these privileges. You go to your room, well, and that's where people are on social media with them right now. It's not a big deal.
No, but I know. But I'm first of all, I like it. I like a passionate fan base. But I will say this about Bill O'Brien. Like Bill O'Brien, yeah, sure, he went 9-7 his first 3 years, but he had 7 different backup quarterbacks. And I know he was part of bringing Brock Osweiler in, but he had 7 different backup quarterbacks. He gets a franchise quarterback for a full season last year. He goes 11-5. And if you fire Bill O'Brien, who are you replacing him with?
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody thinks they're going to find the next Belichick. Honestly, Seth, how many coaches in the NFL make their teams better?
Well, this is the hard part with O'Brien is that, look, okay, he's got about the same win-loss record as Bill Belichick did over his first five seasons in his career. And now, like, obviously, Belichick had to do that over two different areas in both Cleveland and then here. But, like, Belichick had some of the same excuses, but he had some of the same issues that Bill O'Brien did. I think that where people get upset with O'Brien is that he came in billed as an offensive genius.
Right.
They haven't had a good offense.
That's an interesting point.
They've never had better than a top 11 offense. And they've had an okay offense, but they haven't had a really genuinely good offense.
Well, and think about the other gurus that have come along since then.
Yeah.
Like Matt Nagy has made Mitchell Trubisky probably something that he shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. McVay's done it with McVay pulled Jared Goff out of a quarterback grave.
Right.
Like an Andy Reid with Patrick Mahomes. There are other guys that are touted as offensive gurus that are really offensive gurus.
They show results. Yeah. So that's where there's a lot of things about Bill O'Brien that I really like as a head coach. Like, and I think that he's done a good job of maintaining order a lot of times where a lot of other teams would have fallen apart. He did it through multiple different quarterbacks. Like that part of Bill O'Brien I really like. What I've been waiting for is, where's the really good offensive coordinator? Like, where's the offensive genius? Where's the visionary? I haven't seen it yet. If I see it this year, then so be it. But I would be just as fine if Tim Kelly were that guy. You know, I would be just as fine if Bill O'Brien is just a really good head coach. Look, I played for Tom Coughlin. Tom Coughlin is not known as an offensive genius. He was a head coach. He always had an offensive coordinator underneath him. He did it one, I think he called the plays 1 year, maybe in his entire professional career. And yet people still think of him as a great coach. You know, he still oversaw all those other offensive and defensive coordinators.
As long as the production's there, you're going to be thought of as a great head coach.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where I am with Bill O'Brien, in that this year, I would like for this year to be the year that's the prove-it year. I think that some of the frustration with some people is that they don't think that O'Brien's going anywhere anytime soon.
Like, I disagree with that.
You think so?
Well, yeah,
because it's hard not to think that the plan isn't that, okay, you're going to bring Nick Caserio in next year, and then you'll have the true team that Cal McNair wants.
But it's like, I don't know. I mean, now we're getting into some territory.
Now, you don't see that they would fire, you think they would fire Bill O'Brien, or you're saying that you don't see why they would fire Bill O'Brien?
No, I think that if Bill O'Brien, with all this control, has 2-9-7 seasons in a row, I would imagine that he'd be gone.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine that the public pressure would be so much that he'd have to be gone. Now, I'm the new guy. I haven't been around for the first 5 years of Bill O'Brien's tenure, and we don't really know how Cal McNair's going to operate.
Right, we don't. We know that he's not his father. Like, and for a while, I think it became convenient for people to just say, well, he's going to run it just like his dad. Like, no, that's not how father-son relationships work. Like, the son is never exactly like the father. He's going to carry over some of the things. But I think that Cal shows some signs of being a little bit more aggressive than Bob was. You know, now does that mean that he's willing to fire a coach after more than just a 2-14 season? Does it mean that he's willing to go? Like right now, you could look at this whole GM situation as either extreme conservatism or kind of an aggressive move in that set your sights on Caserio, and it's a ballsy move to go without a GM for three quarters of a year.
That's a great point, Seth. You could look at it as super, super non-confrontational. You could say that. You could say, well, you could make the argument that owners sitting back and being super non-confrontational and just letting Bill O'Brien have what Bill O'Brien wants, or you could say they're taking a risk. Okay, we'll get to your phone calls after the break. 713-572-4610. We never paid off on our tees. So Seth Payne was supposed to give us his takeaways from preseason game one, because Seth Payne's got a trained eye. And he played in the NFL, and he watched the game again. He's got a lot of takeaways. So we'll get to that next. And your phone calls, Matthew Jarecki, Seth Payne, Sports Radio 610. All right, Matthew Jarecki in with Seth Payne for a Houston Texans training camp special. Bill O'Brien's taking over the show. Lamont, by the way, wrote in. He said, Lincoln Riley for Bill O'Brien.
Oh, Lincoln Riley.
Well, yeah, no, don't get me wrong. Lincoln Riley's been a really good head coach, but I am wary of looking for the next Sean McVay. It's like these guys are unique. Like, Sean McVay's been around the NFL since he was like 12, mm-hmm. First of all. He is a culture guy, and he's an offensive guru. Like these Belichicks and these Reeds and these McVays, aren't these guys like one of a kind?
They're one of a kind, but that's the argument. I mean, whenever you hire anybody, what do you really know? Like, what you're getting, including a guy that's already proven himself in the NFL. Like, you're always taking a flyer on something.
And I guess there's the argument to be made. Matt Nagy's made it work in Chicago. Mm-hmm. He's an offensive specialist. Andy Reid right now, Sean McVay. There's an argument to be made. That's the way the league's going.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Lincoln Riley would be so good for Deshaun Watson that he's worth it.
Lincoln Riley's making like $6 million a year, and he's got use of a private jet. And
he doesn't want to. Yeah, why would he want to?
And he's like the king of Oklahoma. I don't know. Yeah,
and what are we doing? We're coming. Why are we talking? I was sucked into talking about this because Lamont made a good suggestion. But like, Bill O'Brien's coming off 11-5.
Well, now Lincoln Riley, the closest comparison really would be Chip Kelly, because Chip Kelly did some really, really cool things in college. Like, he was, I would argue that Chip Kelly was more innovative than Lincoln Riley, and that like Chip Kelly in multiple areas, like on and off the field, was doing things just kind of in a way other people hadn't done them before. Lincoln Riley, very innovative on his own, but not necessarily in the same vein as Chip Kelly. But you just never know until they actually get up to the league and make their adaptations. Like, Chip Kelly, some things still took him by surprise. Like, the amount of man coverage you see in the NFL versus college was kind of a shock to Chip Kelly. So Lincoln Riley, likewise, like, you get up to the NFL and you realize there's certain things. Obviously, the spread has spread to the NFL in a lot of ways for good in reason. There's some things you can do in college that you'll never be able to do in NFL, just because, like, the actual shape of the field, because of the rule books, because of some of those things, you can't do it in the NFL. And it's a matter of figuring out what those things are and how quickly could Lincoln Riley do it.
Yeah.
My advice to Lincoln Riley would be never leave Oklahoma.
And I'm not trying to fire Bill O'Brien on the show right now. I mean, he's coming off a division win, or a division championship. So I don't want to go that far. All right, let's go to Mike real quick before we get Seth's takeaways. Mike in West Houston, what do you got on the offensive line problems?
I've always had a problem with what the Texans have done with their offensive line. They've never made emphasis on the line, and only now they had, you know, brought in a couple of guys in this last draft. Seth, you're a great defensive lineman. You couldn't get past a great offensive line. It didn't matter if you had a so-so quarterback or a so-so wide receiver, because they'd have time to get open and do work. Why is there never a emphasis, you know, put towards building a team around the offensive line to make everybody else better?
Well, I think that, you know, they have used capital on the offensive line. One of those guys was Dwayne Brown. You know, they used a first round pick on Dwayne Brown. They had their left tackle in Dwayne Brown, and that all evaporated. And sometimes, like, I even forget to mention that, wow, yeah, all these situations, all these issues we've talked about for the last couple of years, Dwayne Brown was a big fix for a lot of them, and we just let him walk out the door. When Kubiak was here, you know, Kubiak's whole MO offensively is to be able to do well with zone blocking. And with zone blocking, you can do it with a lot of guys that aren't necessarily your first-round draft pick type of offensive lineman. You can get guys that are more athletic and undersized and scrappy and do really well with them, and I thought they did well with that. It was just the transition from Kubiak on into O'Brien where now it's really started to matter. And you're right. They drafted an offensive lineman in the first round. They drafted an offensive lineman the next, like, two of their top three picks were offensive linemen this year. That's commitment. It's a matter of, okay, how quickly is it going to work? So I think they're on the right track now in that they've said, all right, that's it. We've got to flat out get a better offensive line. It's just that Brian Gain just couldn't jump up one spot to perhaps get Dillard, the guy who, by the way, in the preseason game the other day, apparently looked just absolutely incredible. I'm seeing all these videos from the Philadelphia game where Dillard is just handling things like a pro. Like, this guy's ready to play in the NFL, according to a lot of people. That's where they botched it. So they committed to Titus Howard, and maybe he'll work out, but he's not as polished right now as the guy they could have had. So I'm okay with the commitment level right now because they've actually finally done something. If they'd spent money on Roger Saffold in free agency or something, I would have felt a lot better about it. But that's the best I can tell you, is that, yes, it was an issue, and now, at the very least, you've got high draft picks, and maybe they'll go after a free agent this year. I don't know. But hopefully that part of the philosophy has changed.
All right, speaking of these evaluations, let's go to your evaluation, because Seth watched this game, the first preseason game, Texans-Packers. You watched it again, right?
Right. So I went back because I wanted to watch the offensive line specifically.
All right, so give us your take on it.
Just to start off with the quarterback, because, look, Joe Webb isn't going to be a starting quarterback anytime ever in the NFL. But the things that I wanted to watch from him and see how does it translate to Deshaun Watson, the thing I really liked in the first half especially was the bootleg. The way, A, it helps out that offensive line because it's just an easy, if you sell it right, the quarterback is free with no pressure at all. But then, B, because they have tight ends that are so long and so capable of catching the ball this year, I think this might be the year that they really utilize the bootleg effectively, because they've got guys. What does Deshaun Watson excel at with DeAndre Hopkins? Touch throws up and out to the sideline, yep. Touch throws where DeAndre Hopkins is covered, just being able to put the ball up and make it a jump ball to a guy that's athletic enough to bring it down. I'm really intrigued to see what Deshaun Watson does with all these 6'7" tight ends and what he can do in the bootleg, because there's something to play action. Play action from under center is so much more powerful and effective than play action from a shotgun. And I think bootleg, just normal conventional play action, as much as they can do more play action this year, that's going to help Deshaun Watson out. And I'd love to see him do it under center as much as possible. I know it's uncomfortable for college guys sometimes in the modern NFL or modern college football to start to transition into that. I think Deshaun's going to do more of that this year. So that was good to see. The offensive line, I think the caller would probably share some of my sentiment about the offensive line. I'm not feeling great about Matt Khalil at this point. I like that he's more athletic than who you had out there last year. I think that if Matt Khalil is left tackle, they can make do with him for a while, and I think that they can be better as an offensive line with the guys they started the other night. But he's not a long-term solution. If Titus Howard can come along and play left tackle and be good at it sometime by midseason, I think that's a much better alternative. I think there's other guys like even, you know, I don't know how good he is as an NFL player overall, but Roderick Johnson, who's a third-year guy that's never played in the NFL really, looked better than Matt Khalil, in my opinion. Now, a lot of that was later on versus lesser players, but I didn't see anything out of Matt Khalil that made me feel really strong about how he's going to perform for the Texans this year. It's one preseason game. We'll see how he does after this.
What about the cornerbacks? I was actually... Now,
the cornerbacks?
Cornerbacks.
Yeah.
I was actually... I thought what I saw from Roby and Johnson was impressive because they were all over the guys. There were guys that made catches over them. Mm-hmm. Like Lonnie Johnson, the guy caught a 30-yard touchdown pass, but he was step for step with the guy.
He was step for step with him, and it was cover two where it looked like maybe he thought he was going to have some safety help, but he still had him covered pretty well. And it was a nice throw and it was a nice catch. And you take the L on that one. But for the most part, like Lonnie Johnson and all his other snaps was playing good tight man coverage. He was being appropriately physical. I was worried. You worry with college guys because they get away with so much grabbing in college. Like you watch a college game. You know, if you watch an NFL game and then watch a college game immediately afterwards, you're like, why are they not getting called for interference? They're allowed to get away with so much grabbing. I thought Lonnie did a good job of just using his hands, but to stab and to get physical without actually grabbing. And then Roby, same. Yeah, even the receptions against Roby, I thought those were just really good pitches.
Yeah, that's what I thought,
they were good
too.
Pitches and catches. Yeah. So that's big for the Texans this year. Like, they have to be able to play more man defense. Last year when they got stuck playing zone versus the Colts or some good quarterbacks, it got really ugly. And part of the problem was they just didn't have enough guys that could play man. Theoretically, they've got more guys that can play man.
Now, I wonder if, because I think they'd like Lonnie Johnson to be able to step into the starting lineup at some point. Second round pick. He's raw. The write-up on him is that he's raw, but he's a height, weight, speed guy. I wonder if it was, would there be a scenario where it's Lonnie Johnson on one side and Roby on the other, and could Joseph ever move inside of the slot?
It's possible. I would just say don't get your hopes up based on preseason performances with cornerbacks, because like this is the time of year, this is before the craftiness comes in, you know. And every year, just like we see with wide receivers, like every year, a couple years ago it was Braxton Miller, like, wow, he looks incredible during the preseason, and then after the first regular season game, Matt, he says, well, I guess they watched film on me. Like, yeah, they did. They did. That's exactly what happened, Braxton. They watched film on you, and they figured you out. So, likewise with cornerbacks, like, Lonnie will start to get exposed a little bit, and he'll have to make those adjustments. So, I'm reserving my judgment on him until I start to see him in some more high-stakes situations. Versus, like, actually good receivers.
Right. But you have to test him out, though, don't you?
Yeah, and then that's a great thing about a cornerback is that you've got opportunities to do that.
Yeah.
You know, you can put him in situationally and start him off in the red zone, start him off as a nickelback, whatever you want to do. And you can also kind of handpick the matchups that he's going to get early on and start to feel how comfortable you are with him.
Seth, what do you make of, so Lonnie Johnson, who was it? David Bakhtiari or who was it? The left tackle for the Packers came out and was making fun of Lonnie Johnson.
He said, because Lonnie Johnson, after he hit that Green Bay Packer in practice, put it on Instagram and said, hey, it's football.
Right.
And the Packers players weren't happy about that. So after Lonnie Johnson had that touchdown cut on him, David Bakhtiari, the tackle for the Packers, said something. He put it up
on
Instagram. Said, how about that reception?
It's football. 30-yard reception. It's football.
Lonnie handled this right way. He just said, LOL, it was a nice catch.
Right.
And then he let it be. So, like, that's growth out of Lonnie Johnson. You don't have to prove anything on social media.
What I'm wondering about, I know the Packers players were pissed that Lonnie Johnson was so physical in practice. What do Texans players think about that? Are they like, because here's the way I think about it. Like, in all businesses, this happens. You have the young, hungry guy that wants to prove himself, and then you have the veterans that are already making their money. Hey, calm down. We don't need to see that. But these guys are already comfortable.
Uh-huh.
This guy's he's a second-round pick. He doesn't know what his future is going to be. It's not like the franchise isn't completely invested in him. He wants to make a name for himself. So I relate to the guy. I feel for the guy.
Yeah, no, there's no like, oh, wow, I can't believe he hit somebody in practice. Like, that happens. Like, rambunctious rookies do that. And then you talk to them, and they're like, hey, listen, like, what happens in practices is there is a tempo of practice. Like, there's times where you're supposed to hit, there's times where you're not supposed to hit. But sometimes guys go a little too far, and it's not like, it's not the end of the world, you know. And nobody on the team is gonna say, "Oh wow, what a jerk that he did that." But you're also not impressed by it, you okay. know. Like, it's like, okay, yeah, he hit a tight end who didn't think he was gonna get hit in practice. Like, all right, are you trying to be the hardest hitting cornerback in the NFL? Because you know who's not typically the hardest hitting guy on the team? The really good cornerbacks. Like, there's a few cornerbacks in the NFL you think of as hard hitters. Like, I don't know, Antoine Winfield. And
yeah,
maybe
but they're usually not the great cover guys.
Right,
they're
exactly.
the gritty guys.
That's what I would say is, like, okay, Lonnie, that's great that you hit somebody and everything, but do you want to be like a really high paid, awesome cornerback? Because you don't get that way by being the huge hitter. You get that by being the guy that covers everybody all the time.
I do like that he's gritty, though. It seems like the Texans defense, who's got some real attitude on the Texans defense?
I would say, let's see. Okay, because Cushing was like a special case. Cushing was almost like different in that. He was almost affected in that regard. So there's not anybody quite like Cushing. I would say, as far as like an actual edge type player,
is there
like
anybody
an
that's
player,
mean? Who brings have, the?
I mean, everybody's mean. Like, I don't.
Who
get,
brings the edge?
This is what you need to know about the mean guys. Usually, the mean guy is the guy that has the best sound bite. Like, there's nobody that's out there on an NFL field where you're like, oh no, oh my gosh, those guys are mean over there. Like, what am I gonna do? He's mean.
Hold on. I'm trying to think of somebody that was like a.
I mean, like Ray Lewis,
what's
was he
safety?
Mean? No, he was fast as hell.
What was a safety that would take your head off?
Oh, like Steve Atwater or somebody. Yeah. But you can't get away with that anymore.
But so. I'm just saying.
Like, I would say, you know, Justin Reed is a big hitter. Like, Justin Reed can really hit, but he's pretty smart when to do it.
And he's also soft-spoken.
But because he's soft-spoken and because he's eloquent, people aren't going to want to say, like, he's gritty and tough and everything. So, like, he wouldn't be labeled as that guy, but he is a guy that, like, can actually, in this day and age, as much as you're allowed to be an enforcer, like, he'll actually hit people over the middle.
So that doesn't mean anything. So just
no,
being,
I mean, it means something.
Like, attitude, edge, does that mean anything to a defense?
I mean, it can. I guess, like, what are you thinking of? Like,
is discipline more important?
It does. Every team's different. Like, if you think about, all right, like, the Pittsburgh Steelers, when they were really good on defense, James Harrison, all right, that guy's a tone setter. That guy's a different guy. Okay. I'll see you, James Harrison. That guy matters. Yeah. Like, that guy, somebody like that matters.
Actually, Lewis did bring an attitude to the Ravens defense.
He did, but like Lewis, like a lot of times when the red light on the camera was on, like he was talking about.
Of course.
Ray Lewis was just awesome. Like, he was just unbelievable. Yeah. He was unbelievably awesome. His pep talks were a little bit overrated. It was just the fact that he was an awesome inside linebacker. But if you go to like Terrell Suggs or anybody like that,
Suggs was kind of mean.
I'm saying they're good. Like, they're above and beyond. It's a toughness. It's when one of your best players is also like a different level of toughness.
It's just like everybody's so nice on this Texans defense. JJ Watt is just nice.
Nice. Like,
Jonathan
Joseph is
another nice guy. Like, I don't know. Clowney doesn't strike me as like overly nice.
Yeah. All right.
I've
heard people talk about defenses being too nice before, and I just don't get it. Like, I don't understand it. I don't get.
Well, that's
because
you're an ex player.
Yeah. Like, that's guys, they're too nice. I don't understand what that means.
That's because you're an ex player. You don't get it. We want mean.
Yeah. No, but you're saying what do you want? What do you want? Do you want Vontaze Burfict? You want more unsportsmanlike conduct?
Yeah, not in
today's
NFL.
Is that what mean is? Is like Vontaze Burfict mean?
No, you bring up a good point. But I think about like the Patriots by the end of the year are always one of the most disciplined defenses. Like they always have a great scoring defense. Uh-huh. They give up a lot of yards, but they have a great scoring defense. They're never mean.
Right.
They're just smart.
They've got they don't have I'm honestly not arguing with you about, as I'm thinking my way through, like, okay, what is genuinely an edgy football player?
Well, the point is, does Lonnie Johnson's edge help at all, or is it just?
Oh,
like,
no, it helps a lot if he's a really good player. If he's not a really good player, he's a pain in the ass. Like, that's when it matters. Like, there's nothing more annoying than the player who's not good, who's telling everybody else, like, come on, guys, you're gonna be tough. Yeah. You're gonna be tough because I yell a lot and that makes me good. That gets really annoying. So if he's awesome, then yeah. If he's not, then it kind of sucks.
Okay, coming up next, it's Seth Payne in with Matthew Jarecki's Texans training camp special on a Saturday. We'll go back Bill O'Brien spoke about Duke Johnson today, the big addition at backup running back. That's next, Sports Radio 610.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.